Patrick and Arye and I went up to a Buddhist scholars conference at UC Berkeley, and they said a lot of stuff that was hard to understand, but I did pick up on one quote that relates to this class from somebody quoted Shantarakshito, who is one of the classic Indian middle way commentators. And I think he said something like, consciousness which directly perceives its object, consciousness which directly perceives its object is naturally radiant or luminous or radiant brightness, radiant light. I caught that part.
Is this text pre-Dogen?
Yeah. Indian text pre-Dogen. Yeah, so, you know, I'm always interested, now that we're in this particular essay, of these early references in Buddhism to the light or the radiance, is my ears perk up when I hear them. Consciousness, which directly perceives its object, is naturally radiant or bright, luminously knowing its object. And as I mentioned in response to Rachel last week, this teacher Sung Mi in the early Tang Dynasty, Chan teacher, Zen teacher, also influenced a lot by the Flower Ornament Sutra, the Avatamsaka Sutra. So he's early Zen. So, and he says that, we talked about this last week, nature arising versus dependent arising. And Sung Mi says that the southern school of Zen, Zen was a really new thing in China at this time, but the southern school, which is our school, coming from the sixth ancestor of Zen, is based on the view of nature arising, or that everything is manifesting as an expression of Buddha nature, as opposed to just purely everything is empty, or everything is dependently arising. These are also true to some extent, but he said the unique trademark of the Southern school was, according to Sung Mi, is this everything is manifesting as an expression of Tathagata Garbha or Buddha nature, and therefore everything that in the universe is Buddha nature.
Everything
with no exception. And so one passage, well, Sung Mi himself says this in this way, kind of like I just said, quote, there is not a single phenomena or dharma, not a single thing or phenomena that is not a manifestation or a manifestation of the fundamental mind, which is another name here for Buddha nature. And
isn't that obvious?
How could
it possibly be otherwise?
I think other schools of Buddhism don't usually talk exactly this way.
That's odd, because I mean, it's like, how could you come up with another?
Even the so-called mind-only school, I think, is a little different. And Sung Mi, in his kind of, he's sort of a practitioner scholar himself in the 7th century, and he carefully delineates these Zen teaching, early Zen teachings, and that sound kind of similar to us, but he says these ones are a little bit more like Yogacara or mind only, which is not the same as Buddha nature. These are a little bit like Madhyamaka, middle way, is not quite the same. So, for example, mind only says that everything is a kind of like projection of this deluded mind. So, Alaya Vijnana, the storehouse consciousness, is basically like this storehouse of all these habitual deluded tendencies, and all the habits of seeing dualistically is the storehouse. So therefore it projects this dualistic appearance of the world. So in that way, everything we perceive is a kind of deluded projection, is a sort of I'm sort of summarizing my understanding of the kind of the essence of the mind, so-called mind-only school or Yogacara. Everything is a deluded projection, so therefore just don't really believe anything that we see, hear, think, perceive, experience at all. So like that. Whereas Buddha nature, this nature arising, is very similar, but instead of saying everything's a projection of this deluded storehouse consciousness, everything's an expression or manifestation of the perfectly pure, undefiled, non-dual Buddha awareness. Therefore, everything is not a deluded projection. Everything is a pure appearance of Buddha nature. So in some ways it sounds very similar, but in another way it's like the opposite. In other words, mind only says everything we perceive is total delusion. Whereas this Tathagata Garbha, nature arising, says everything we perceive is total enlightenment. But we just can't really accept that. And you could see how that would be a kind of foundation for the Zen teachings. And it's kind of good news, right? It's a positive message. It's, we're all Buddhas. It's just that we can't quite, accept that. Whereas mind only says, we're not Buddhas, we're just totally deluded.
Yeah. Is it at all, is it animistic or is it different than everything being suffused with Buddha nature?
It's not like, pantheism? No, what is it?
Pantheism, or is it
pantheistic is where, panpsychism is the word I'm thinking of. Panpsychism, as my understanding, is that all phenomena in the universe have a kind of consciousness. So it's not saying that.
No, I'm thinking of just an old traditional sort of animism where everything has a God nature.
Yeah. Well, that would sound similar to panpsychism, okay. that in it, like rocks have a kind of consciousness. I think it's not saying that, although it's often confused with that. My understanding is it's like there is only this one mind, they say in Zen sometimes, or boundless, inconceivable, non-dual awareness, and there's not multiple of them, like each thing has its own. There's only one inconceivable reality like this, and it manifests as all these sentient beings, particularly, and then the sentient being can see like the floor or a rock, and because we see it, it is a manifestation of the Buddha nature, which is and we are a manifestation of the Buddha nature, we sentient beings, and therefore through our vision, if we perceive a rock, it is also a manifestation of the same Buddha nature. But it's kind of like, in that case, the rocks being a manifestation of Buddha nature is, known through us as sentient beings. See how that's a little bit different than saying the rock is like thinking about us. It's not quite saying that as I understand it. It's more saying everything that appears and exists is an expression or a manifestation of this awareness. And without sentient beings with eyes and ears and minds, there's no way that could be known, that rocks can't be known without sentient beings to know them. But this knowing of sentient beings, that seems kind of dualistic. It seems like I'm over here looking at a floor over there. It's more like the whole thing is non-dual, pervaded by this non-dual awareness. So what I think of as me, Kokyo, this body and mind, is an expression of this one reality, awareness, and so is the floor. But it's a little bit different, like us sentient beings and the floor are a little bit different, because almost like the floor is a little bit like secondary, like it's being known through the consciousness of sentient beings. You might say, if there were no sentient beings, would there still be like manifestations of rocks and so on? And my understanding would be, well, no, not really like that. The manifestation would be, rocks are these particular objects known by sentient beings. Does might be a little hard to follow, but
it seems like there's two.
It's okay.
It seems like the two ideas that you're presenting about everything is delusion, the Yogacara idea, and the everything has Buddha nature idea. It seems
or is like, Buddha nature.
Sorry, is Buddha nature.
Is an expression of Buddha nature.
It seems like totally irreconcilable, almost.
That they're so different, you mean?
Yeah.
In a way, they're very similar, right? And you can, and I think historically the this understanding of Tathagatagarbha did evolve out of the mind-only kind of idea, really looking, wow, everything that can possibly be known is known by this mind. But then so they're very similar. And I think they're not really, you could even say they're two sides of one coin. You could say the way, the actual reality is this pure reality that everything's an expression of the one Buddha nature, and so the Tathagatagarbha is a kind of ultimate expression of how things really are, and then the mind-only version is a nice explanation for how delusion works, for how deluded sentient beings, and delusion is an illusory thing, right? You could say, but we seem to think that the floor is out here separate from us, and mind-only is a great story for how that illusion of separation and duality comes to be. So one's just more the perspective of delusion, and one's the perspective of awakening. So in that way, they're not really even, don't have to be two separate schools exactly. But that from when you're in one point of view, it sounds very different from the other.
So you would need both. You'd need delusion in order to have awakening, because without it, you would already be awake. And the thought...
We could also say it the other way. You need awakening to have delusion.
Of course. Well, no, sure. Why not?
Or you need the reality of Buddha mind for delusion to appear, for this reality of non-duality somehow starts manifesting as confusion and delusion.
I think the crux of what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling about this, and if I ask it now, I don't have to ask it anymore, then if we say the infinite includes everything, however you want it to call the infinite, and if it's Buddha nature, don't expect that to be everything nice. It's everything.
Oh, yeah,
that
yeah.
means delusion is part, is mm-hmm. nothing can arise that is not mm-hmm. of this,
mm-hmm.
this. And that's Nazism, that's kindness, that's sainthood, that's delusion, it's all part of Buddha nature. It has to be.
Of course.
You can't get out of that.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And Dogen's going to get into that issue, I
know,
think, a little bit.
Like I'm,
a little
but
bit.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
to get there, I'm going, oh.
Yeah. So, nothing's excluded.
That's the obvious, isn't it? That's mm-hmm. the obvious truth.
Yeah.
Nothing can get outside
yeah,
of course.
Itself. That is the obvious truth.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that.
If they don't, you know... They gotta go back to school.
And we could
they
say,
need to get a doctor
and we could say, well, then what's the point of, you know, the bodhisattva vow and bodhisattva precepts and goodness and right over wrong and so on. And one way we could say, and I think you could hear this in Dogen hopefully later today, is that if we realize this all-inclusiveness really fully, then from that vision, the response of that clear vision is always goodness. That's part of the interesting thing going here.
If you realize it.
Yeah, if you realize, yeah.
You hear and you say if it's Buddha nature, then it's here for a reason. So that it must be here to teach or to do something. Well, you don't. If
to show us how to wake up from it.
To wake up from
yeah.
it.
Yeah. But that suffering is here to show us how to be free from it. You
Seems
could say.
Like it.
Yeah, it's one way to look at it.
That's
it. So. I think Sunmi is pulling this, deriving his understanding, largely from the Flower Ornament Sutra, and particularly this chapter called, the chapter is called Manifestation of the Tathagata. And this is a scriptural source for how everything is appearing as a manifestation of the Tathagata is another name here for like the Tathagata Garbha, Buddha nature, the heart of reality itself. You know, it never quite says it so explicitly, explains, but that seems to be the meaning of the Tathagata. And in this chapter, the Buddha says, the body of the Tathagata, and you can hear this Tathagata here, we can hear as like all-embracing, inconceivable, non-dual awareness with no boundaries that's present right here, right now, that is our actual experience, that Tathagata. The body of the Tathagata is present everywhere, in all sentient beings. All things, all phenomena, and all lands. So not just sentient beings, but the body of the Tathagata is present in all phenomena in the universe. Like space, which is present everywhere. And all bodhisattva, mahasattvas should perceive it thus. So everything we can see in the phenomena world is the body of Buddha. The speech of the Tathagata is present everywhere because it pervades all infinite sounds. So everything we can possibly hear throughout the universe is the speech of Buddha. It has no creation and destruction. It's like an echo. An echo is one of those images they often use in Indian Buddhism for like, it's a sound, the sound is manifesting, but it's not really coming from its original source. A little bit like a rainbow is manifesting in this sort of unreal way. In the visual realm, they use echo. In the sound realm, the sutra goes on, the mind, thought, and consciousness of the Tathagata are ungraspable. Only because knowing or awareness is boundless can one know the mind of the Tathagata. As space is the support of all things, while space has nothing for its own support, so is this awareness of the Tathagata jnana, the support for all mundane wisdom and supermundane wisdom, while the wisdom of the Tathagata has nothing as its support. So we could even say, if the body is the body of Buddha is everything we see, the speech of the Buddha is everything we hear. The mind of the Buddha doesn't exactly say this, but I would understand it as everything we think and feel and experience. That all sentient beings think and hear is the mind of the Buddha.
Like this, and I'm sorry, I apologize for the diversion. I wonder why personify it all?
I think it's kind of poetic in a way. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's sort of, you know, it's a long sutra, and so it's not just like giving this, like, instead of saying, we're talking about the present awareness of you right now, they're saying, if that's what you're asking, right? The body of the Tathagata.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a certain kind of Mahayana sutra way of talking. That's, like you say, I think it is like a kind of a personification. And when it's because the Mahayana gets into this three body Buddha thing. So it's like the early sutras, they're just talking about Nirmanakaya, Shakyamuni Buddha is this person walking around planet Earth. Whereas the Mahayana Sutras from the beginning, I think, and they all seem to imply this kind of Buddhas, sometimes talked about in that way, there's a person talking to the assembly, and sometimes talked about as this like the vastness of everything.
A deity.
In a way, a deity. It depends what we mean by deity. You could say, well, I would understand it in this kind of down-to-earth way, as it's a very flowery in the sutra. Flowery way of talking about this ordinary awareness. And the Zen people are like, we don't need to be so flowery, so let's call it, instead of calling it Tathagata Jnana, let's just call it ordinary mind. That was the kind of style of the Zen school. It's like, let's bring it down a little bit to earth here. But I would say, it's just different styles of expression.
Yeah, it's definitely a common one in history and all that.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a Zen person.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, of course, the Zen people are playing with these Mahayana sutras too, so they're sometimes talked this way also. And this is the later, just after this section about the body, speech, and mind of the Buddhas. This is the maybe most famous, well-known section of this huge flower ornament sutra follows right here, where the Buddha says, "How strange! How strange! How can it be that although all sentient beings are fully possessed of this Tathagata Jnana, we could translate as the knowing of the Buddha or the Buddha awareness, because of their ignorance and confusion, they neither know or see that. How strange. Therefore, I, Shakyamuni Buddha, should teach them the noble path so that they can forever leave this false thinking and attachment and perceive the great awareness of the Tathagata within themselves, not different from all the Buddhas." So in Zen, they like to quote that section. I've never heard any people quote that thing about the body, speech, and mind of the Tathagata, but I like it. Even though, yeah, it can sound a little bit theistic. We hear things like, in Christianity, right? Like, this is the body of Christ.
Take and eat
this, and then the Protestants say, well, that's just symbolic, and the Catholics say, no, it really is. So I think that it really is kind of, we could see as this Buddha nature view. Maybe we don't want to mix religions too much here, right?
I don't mind that.
But if we understand, you know, God or even Jesus as like awareness itself, this cracker actually is God's awareness. Literally, it is. And I think,
like any monism would say that.
Yeah, in a way, it's kind of monism.
But then it's like, okay, then take a bite out of this ton and it's the same as...
Yes, exactly. We have to say that too. We have to say it's not just that cracker, right? It is the ton too.
Yeah, and you're not just eating like a little piece of Jesus' fingernail. You're eating a piece of the ton also.
In a way.
Monism.
Yeah. You're eating a part of... Everything is God's body, and everything we eat is that. And, you know, I think probably people maybe don't understand it quite this way, even Catholics. It's esoteric ritual, I would say.
Both of those quotes you read were out of the flower ornament.
Yeah. So, and here's another kind of warm-up quote, just to remind us about this light from... before we go back to Dogen. This is Keizan Zenji, a couple of generations after Dogen in 14th century Japan, kind of co-founder of Soto Zen along with Dogen. In his Transmission of Light, Denko Roku, it's the same ko as this komyo, and he uses the image of light a lot actually in this record. And but here's a really strong... Also, remember, we were talking... Dogen's quoting this Changsha saying, "The whole universe in 10 directions is the radiant light of the self." That's one of like the... Which I think, that's why I read this Avatamsaka Sutra quote, because it sounds very similar. It doesn't use the image light, but it says, all the lands and the phenomena in the universe are the body of the Buddha, to me, sounds a lot like the whole universe in Ten Directions is the radiant light of the self. And so here in the Keizan's commentary on the 40th ancestor, Dongan, Keizan says, when you see it fully, you will doubtlessly know that there is an I. You will know that there is a self. And, you know, we have to remember in the background that Buddhism, trademark of Buddhism is anatman, anatta, no self, right? So this is like, I don't think it's contradictory. It's a way of talking about no self as this ultimate self that is completely empty. But here it caught my attention because it's so explicit. When you see it fully, you will without doubt know that there really is a self. If you want to know this place, when you cast away good and bad and don't get involved with objects or others, this mind itself shines naturally with a brightness brighter than the sun and moon. Its purity is purer than frost or snow. It's not blind or unaware of good and bad. I thought that was interesting, because you realize it by casting away good and bad, but when you realize it, you see it's not obscuring good and bad. It's not blind. Yeah, it doesn't. It includes good and bad, but it's not unaware of the difference between good and bad either. This self is spontaneously manifested, pure and bright. When you finally arrive and settle properly in the true reality, you will not be able to say that it exists because it's empty and clear. This is a nice part, I think. This is why it's not like not some substantialism. It's not a reified thing called a self. This is why it's in accord, I would say, with no self. Because this self, when you arrive here, you will not be able to say that it exists. It's totally empty and clear. But also you will not be able to say that it doesn't exist because it's bright or luminous and keenly aware. It cannot be discriminated with body, speech, or mind, nor can it be discerned with mind, conceptualization, or perception. Nice section, I think. The middle way. This awareness doesn't exist. In other words, it's another name for emptiness, but it's not a nihilistic emptiness in which there's nothing at all because it's bright and aware. It's light. Just like light, like physical light that fills the room, is we can't say that it exists as some thing. We can't get it. We can't even see it as an object. And yet we don't say that it doesn't exist because it's illuminating the room. I like the middle way. So one quote about the self as another name for the light. And another one that I think is really sweet is Menzan Zenji, who was, I think, the 1700s in Japan, and was one of the, from that era, he was one of the great commentators on Dogen's teachings, and compiling Dogen's teachings and illuminating them. And he wrote an essay called Jijyu Zamai, which Dogen has a teaching called Jijyu Zamai that's translated as like self-fulfilling samadhi. So Menzan, yeah, in the 1700s, Menzan says, Jijyu Zamai, or self-fulfilling samadhi, is also called Komyo Zo Zamai. Komyo is this radiant light, and Zo is storehouse. So this is another samadhi, another Zamai. Komyo Zo Zamai is the treasury of radiant light samadhi, is another name for the self-fulfilling samadhi. And he also says the jewel mirror samadhi is another name. All these names of all the samadhis we know, it's when I first read this many years ago, after hearing all these samadhis, we have to practice all these different ones and discern the differences. He says, they're all names for the same thing. There's like 10 of them. Phew. That makes it, okay, now at least we can just do one practice. And then, you know, this is a great essay that Shohaku Okamura translated. We've talked about in this hall in the past and maybe again in the future. He says, after describing how great it is and how it has all these names, this samadhi, this meditation practice, Menzan says, now I will explain in detail the way to clarify and rely on this samadhi. Again, I remember first reading this and thinking, getting like the pencil out. I'm like, okay, here, finally, we heard how great it is. Now give me the detailed instructions. This is how we do it. Ready for the method in detail? This is done, listen carefully, simply by not obscuring the radiant light of the self.
That's a small task.
You're blinding me over there.
So it's the same term, jiko komyo, from changsha. I think he's probably referring to changsha, the radiant light of the self. Right, the whole universe in the 10 directions is the radiant light of the self. Jiko komyo. So Menzan's, you know, essential instructions for jijiyuzama. He also says shikantaza is another name for this, which means just wholeheartedly sitting. Junior samadhi, the self-fulfilling samadhi, the ocean seal samadhi. He just goes through this whole list.
Isn't that one of the king of kings?
The king of samadhis. Everyone the Dogen ever, mentions. The mother of samadhis.
Silent
illumination. He mentions in this essay, he mentions Mokusho. Yeah. So it's a different, it doesn't have Ko or Myo in it, but it's, I think, same idea. Yeah, silent illumination. The practice is simply to not obscure or cloud over the radiant light of the self. Then he goes on to say, that's basically it, but when the light of the self is clear, you don't follow dullness or distraction. And then he says, to clarify this further, the third ancestor in the Song of the Trusting Mind, this is not part that we chant, but a later part of that great Zen poem, the third ancestor says, it is empty, clear, and self-illuminating with no exertion of the mind's power. Again, a little bit like Kazan, he's emphasizing these two sides. He's talking about this trusting mind, this radiant light. It's empty, but it's also clear, which is a little bit like it's knowing, and it's self-illuminating. It's naturally radiant. It's naturally bright and clear with no effort. We don't have to do anything to make it that way. It's empty, clear, and self-illuminating with no exertion of the mind's power. This is a quote from the Song of the Trusting Mind. And I think the next lines are something like, it's not a matter of mind, thought, or consciousness, or discrimination, or it's not dualistic thought. And then Menzan, this commentator, says, this is the vital point of the practice and realization of this samadhi. This is like the light of a jewel illuminating itself, like the light of the sun or moon illuminating everything equally without differentiation or evaluation. So the light of awareness illuminates itself and it illuminates the 10 directions also. And to go even further, the 10 directions that are illuminated by the light are nothing other than the light. They are the illumination.
And the self.
And the self is that radiant light.
Yeah.
Therefore, we can also say, we can deduce then, that the whole universe in 10 directions is the self. Mm-hmm. The big self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the entire body.
And it's the entire body, and it's the eye of a contemplative, and it's the ordinary speech of a contemplative.
So, no matter what term you use, self, light, any of them, where do they come from?
Even my ears started even, like, melting when you even asked the question.
Well, I mean, because it sounds like we're wanting an answer, you know, and that...
We can, nobody can say what it is.
No, that's...
But actually, you know, in a way we say, it's by itself illuminating, kind of implies that it never, it's not dependent, it didn't arise from anything else, right? It didn't arise, actually.
No,
it's also called the unborn. So in a way, maybe most accurately, we could say, it didn't, what did you say, where did it come from?
Yeah.
It didn't come from anywhere.
No. So this, and so it doesn't go to sitting here just in awe and wonder instead of really trying to be academic.
Yeah.
I'm just being...
What's that bumper sticker of, like, if you're not in awe, you're not paying attention?
Yeah. That's a good one.
So are these, are these what Buddha taught? Is this an apologia?
Well, like you heard, that flower ornament sutra is a Mahayana sutra attributed to the Buddha. And earlier in the first class, I did mention a few Pali canon quotes about the radiant light.
But this whole concept, this whole expression, this is Buddha's teaching, or this evolved?
Well, like, so the Pali Canon ones I mentioned were, didn't get in, those I don't think ever get into that the whole world is the light of the self. They just are saying, the most famous one is, this mind is luminous, or radiant, and it's obscured by our dualistic thoughts and tendencies. And that's why, this run-of-the-mill ordinary people run around confused.
And that was in a talk that Buddha gave.
Yeah, so that's, you know, and all Buddhists agree that these Nikayas, the Pali Canon, is like, you know, we say like scriptural authority, right? It's like the words of the Buddha. The Theravadins don't always say that the Mahayana Sutras are. And then within the Mahayana Sutras, there is some that maybe were written in China, but the Flower Ornament Sutra, I like quoting that because amongst the Mahayana sutras, that one is really universal and one of the most important, considered one of the most important. So the tradition does evolve, for sure, like every tradition evolves creatively. And then the Mahayana creatively expands on the earlier teachings, on the foundational teachings. And then Zen gets even more creative. And kind of pushes the limits even further. Still, I think it's beautiful within any tradition how they still this. I think the great ancestors within a lineage or tradition are always very careful about like trying to stay true to the tradition. So they'll look for these pieces in the sutras that do talk about this to back them up. And so we're not like completely making something up. But for example, like mind-only school is like this kind of later derivation, always based on earlier teachings, and not really contradictory, but a creative interpretation going a certain direction. And to Tathagatagarbha, this Buddha nature school, kind of derives out of this mind-only tradition. And to be honest, it is, I think, probably the most controversial movement in Buddhist history because it sounds so close to some substantialism or monism or some kind of, you know, self in a tradition that's so emphasizing emptiness and no self. So it's controversial, and yet my feeling is that the early Zen school, if you look at the middle way, Madhyamaka, is really emphasizing emptiness. Mind only is really emphasizing everything as projections of mind. And then Buddha nature, Tathagatagarbha, everything is this manifestation of pure awareness. That of these three traditions, the more I look into this, I feel like the early Chan was most influenced by this Tathagatagarbha. All three of them, I think it was. And I think a lot of modern American commentaries ignore this one because it's kind of controversial. And it's really more based on middle way emptiness teachings and mind only. And because this is like sticky. Some people don't like it. And Dogen is, I think, knows about this controversy a little bit already in the 13th century. And so he's very careful when he's talking about Buddha nature. He has the longest essay Dogen ever wrote. It's called Buddha Nature. So it's not a simple matter for him. And yet he rides a kind of, like he usually does, tries to not fall into any camp. But, yeah. So that's part of the history going on here.
So did you say the Mahayana was the Buddhist teaching? I thought it was after.
Well, so again, you say, like, we have the scholars' answer to the question, and then we have the kind of, like, the religious faithful followers of a tradition,
yeah,
their answer, right? So I could say, like, as a scholar, actually, I think most of them would say, both the Pali Canon and the Mahayana Sutras are not literally the words of the Buddha, because everything was written many centuries after Buddha. And they still can go into the Pali Canon and say these are seem more like probably the earliest strata of the Pali Canon, and then like the Sutta Nipata and so on. And then there's a lot of later additions. And I think that scholars now are saying that a lot of the Pali Canon came into, you know, its final form of in written form around the same time as the early Mahayana Prajnaparamita Sutras. So they're almost contemporary. And then there were later ones. The sutras kept appearing. And, the faithful of the school say, well, we don't need to get into, like, historically, actually. We just say, like, these are the words of the Buddha. And do we mean Shakyamuni Buddha? Well, there's three Buddha bodies. These are the words coming from the Dharmakaya. And, they're often usually attributed to Shakyamuni Buddha, but we might say, you know, they're channeled through some other Nirmanakaya anonymously or something. So, in a way, I think it's an interesting discussion in itself, just like how a tradition evolves and what do you go with? Because things start to, the more it evolves, the more the contradiction there seems to be. So in some ways it's kind of like we resonate with some teachings more than others, each of us, and then I think we're drawn to traditions that ring true for us. That's how I feel. It's like I love all the Buddhist traditions, but the ones that I like practice most fully in are the ones where the view is most in accord with how my experience so far. And partly it works both ways, because my experience is influenced by the view of the school. So, yeah.
So, in the Theravada world, there's been more demarcation lately of people who teach early Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're kind of trying to separate there,
you know, slow. Yeah, I mean, I think of like Theravada as early Buddhism.
Okay.
You know, that's, or I think foundational Buddhism, because all schools of Buddhism agree on that layer of that's Buddhist teachings, but not all of them, all the Theravadins agree with some of this weird Mahayana stuff. So it's nice to include all of it. the more layers, then the more there is to include, but also the more complex it gets. It's nice to have that simple layer, but particularly all these teachings about non-duality are just so alive for me in the last few years, and that's mostly really like in these, not even so much in the Mahayana sutras, but really in like Zen and Dzogchen. Really, I think, are the main, and Mahamudra, within Buddhism, and also Advaita Vedanta, and Kashmiri Shaivism, and other Eastern and Western traditions. So, back to Radiant Light. We got to this point where Dogen says, talking about the emperor, when Buddhism first came to China in 67 CE, and then later, 500 years later, Bodhidharma came, and he transmitted this light to China in the form of the Zen lineage. This is intimacy within the radiant light of the Buddhas and ancestors. So this is we're at the 1, 2, 3. Fifth paragraph. Until that time, no one in China had seen or heard of the radiant light of Buddha ancestors. Again, Buddha ancestors is this tradition, way of saying Zen, the Zen school. Who then was even aware of the radiant light of the self? Even though people had been carrying the radiant light within their heads and encountering it all the time, they still did not practice it as their own eyeballs. Thus, they do not clarify the shape and function of radiant light. Because they avoided encountering or meeting the radiant light, their radiant light was missing radiant light. Although missing is itself radiant light, they were immersed in missing. This is a classic Dogen.
Yeah. Director
of
veiled attack on the Tendai school.
How do you see that?
Because the Tendai, they had all been in China doing what they thought was practicing Buddhism.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
For like hundreds yes. of years.
I think it is. I think you could see it as a veiled or direct attempt at critiquing the Tendai school, which was this dominant force. We talked a little bit last week, I think, about this. This dominant force in Japan at this time, politically and powerfully, and we know that later, or around this time, around 1243, when this was written, maybe a year later, Dogen was kind of driven out of Kyoto by the Tendai school, and so I think there is some, I think this is a, you could say there's a little sectarian polemics or something going on here, actually. I think that's right. I think that these paragraphs about Zen is this new way, and Dogen's the spokesperson for it, and the radiant light wasn't there before. And so there is something unique about the radical non-duality of Zen that was... You can find it, I think, in the Tendai teachings, but it's not the total emphasis as it is in Zen. So, yeah, that's right. And this is, I think, a beautiful part here where, so the radiant light, if we say it is this self, this ever-present, awareness here and now, everyone's been carrying it within their heads or, you know, another translation, within their brain. So I'm not sure, what he means exactly, but maybe, they have it already. And they're encountering it all the time, yet they did not practice it as their own eyeballs. And here, eyeballs are, genzei is another term that Dogen uses for like the Dharma eye, or the true seeing. So, they are this light, but they don't practice it. They really practice here, again, is this word sangaku, to meet and investigate it. Sangaku is to meet and investigate it as their own eyeballs. Thus, they do not or did not clarify the shape and function of radiant light. So they were the radiant light, but how the radiant light functions, they haven't clarified. Because they avoided meeting or encountering it, the radiant light was missing radiant light, or another, actually, it's up above from last week, there was this, what was it up above? In the very first paragraph, this coarse and distant, where is it? Let's see. The second paragraph, those who practice should not be coarse or distant, or alienated is another translation. It's the same term here, actually. So, where it says, was missing is actually referring back to this earlier part. Their radiant light became coarse and distant. Or maybe a best translation I would say is, they became alienated from their own radiant light. The radiant light was alienated from radiant light. Although missing or alienation is itself radiant light, they were immersed in missing, or they were, another translation is, they were restricted by alienation. That would maybe make it more obscure. Or they were obscured by the alienation from the light. So that's a classic Dogen, which is a little bit, he always has to include this ultimate, this, you know, alienation is the radiant light.
I have to say that.
But they're alienated from the radiant light.
Understood.
That kind of thing is, yeah, is classic Dogen. And as I mentioned, you know, this new book by Katagiri Roshi came out called The Light That Pervades the Universe. The Light That Shines Through the Universe, something like that. That's kind of about light. And this, and here's another one just came out this week or so by Shinshu Roberts, our Santa Cruz, another Zen teacher in Santa Cruz down the road, called Being Time, on Dogen's Being Time. And there's a, this term komyo appears in Shobo Genzo Uji, Being Time, something like the 16-foot golden body is time. The last sentence is, the time, this is the actual summary of this whole book. The time being means time, just as it is being, and being is all time. That's Dogen.
Could you substitute no time?
I think he's emphasizing this, this arising and ceasing that we call time. Mm-hmm. is being that's not arising and ceasing, I think is the kind of dialectic in this particular essay. U and G, he takes up both sides, and the whole essay unfolds this, but the next line of Dogen is, the 16-foot golden Buddha body is time, because it is time, it has time's glorious radiant light. Or it is, this Buddha is time's glorious radiant light, or komyo. This appearing, manifesting Buddha body is time. Time is like the arising and ceasing, right? So the Buddha body is time. Because it is time's glorious radiant light. Yeah.
Can we say then simply time arises out of timeless?
Yeah.
And then we can talk about time.
Or it appears to arise out of timeless.
Yeah, what do we know?
And as you know, Dogen really loves this word manifestation, or genjo. So it's a little bit different than arises out of. It's more like time manifests
out of timeless.
Out of timeless. Yeah, Dogen might like to say it like that.
Yeah. And that's a mystery. Yeah. How can that happen? That's just...
How can that...
That's, we don't...
Happens like this.
like this.
And so then, this whole chapter, Shinshu talks about Komyo, where she quotes this essay, Radiant Light. And she quotes, she picks out just a few lines, but this is one of them. This thing, although missing, is itself radiant light. They were immersed in missing. So here's her comments on this line. Although our true nature is radiant light, we do not see it, and we do not practice it. Even so, Dogen characterizes this blindness as missing is itself radiant light. This does not mean that it is acceptable to engage in unskillful or immoral actions. Dogen is speaking of golden radiance, radiant light, as the fundamental state of being time, a state that's deeper than right or wrong. This gets into your earlier question, right? It's deeper than right or wrong, and it includes right and wrong. When we abide in that state, or that reality, as our true nature, we naturally respond skillfully. I think that's a nice way to say it. It includes skill and unskill, but when we abide in the reality, we naturally respond skillfully.
The translation is really interesting, being time as opposed to time being.
Yeah.
It's like, time being is like, being, isn't it? It kind of, to me, the connotation of that is like being is a manifestation of time. And being time is like.
I think it's the other way around. Really, time's more a manifestation of being. But really, they're interfused, as Dogen says.
I see.
The two truths cannot be separated. But literally, you know, it's called Uji, and the order is being, time. So that's maybe most literal. But time being is this phrase in English, for the time being.
It's a book of fiction that's called For the Time Being by a Zen priest.
So there's a lot in that essay too, right? Those stinky skin bags. Dogen has to go on a rant once in a while. Who miss the... Well, the stinky skin bags are those who miss the point that both Buddha light and human light... or they think that both Buddha light and human light are red, white, blue, or yellow. So they think that the light that we're talking about here has some particular color, form, or you know, manifestation, like fire light or water light, pearl light or jewel light, the dragon king's light or sun and moon light. So, in other words, this is now he's emphasizing the inconceivability and unseeability of this light. However hard they study with teachers and sutras, if they hear about the radiant light and think it must be like If they hear about the radiant light and think it must be like the way of a firefly, it is not the study with ultimate insight. There have been many like that from the Han, Sui, Tang, and Sung dynasties until now. Don't study with such Dharma teachers of letters. Don't listen to such confused views of Zen teachers. The radiant light of Buddha ancestors spoken of here is not red or yellow or anything. It is the entire world of the ten directions, as well as all Buddhas and all ancestors. Only a Buddha and a Buddha, which is another essay of Dogen, and a quote from the Lotus Sutra. It is Buddha light and light Buddha. Buddha ancestors maintain Buddha ancestors as radiant light. They practice and realize this radiant light and become Buddhas, sit as Buddhas, and realize Buddhas. They verify Buddhas. They confirm Buddhas.
What was the Ten Wise School actually teaching then?
it's a Mahayana. This Mahayana Buddhism, and some of it sounds a lot like Zen, but I think the critique is from the Zen people is it's a little bit more like convoluted and complicated, and they have too much explanation, whereas Zen is just this like cutting through, direct pointing. That was Bodhidharma's thing. A separate transmission outside the sutras and the commentaries, directly pointing to the human mind, so we can realize our true nature and become Buddha. That's the kind of motto of the Zen school attributed to Bodhidharma. And the Tendai people are like, no, not so fast there. First, like, study how this is. So that, you know, that's one maybe brief distinction.
What do you think Bodhidharma would make of Dogen?
He'd love him.
Or would he think he's getting too complicated?
I think he would just say that's how it's, that's how he's expressing it, yeah.
No, I'm fine.
And he was kind of a poet. Bodhidharma maybe wasn't such a poet. He was more of like a wall gazer. So,
that's why I'm
so if you have poetic karma, then you write the Shobogenzo.
Okay, yeah, and you'd like Rumi too.
Yeah, of course. This being so, it is said in the Lotus Sutra, in the introductory chapter of the Lotus Sutra, this light illuminates the 18,000 Eastern Buddha lands. From the heavens to the hells, if you read in the sutra, describes the Buddha sitting there about to teach the Lotus Sutra, and from the white curl of hair between his eyebrows, he emits this radiant light that illuminates all these 18,000 Buddha lands in the eastern direction. So light just like, you know, radiates boundlessly, illuminating the heavens and the hells and all these beings in the lands. Then you think he's going to say the east, west, south, and north, but it's such a long description that they never even get to the other directions. But Dogen loves the Lotus Sutra. So he picks up this quote about light and says, these words are radiant light. This light is Buddha light. Illuminating the east is the east illuminating. The east is not the east of the common world. It's the center of the world of phenomena. It's called the Dharmadhatu, the universe. You could say the world of phenomena is the universe, the Dharmadhatu. So the east is the center of the universe. So we're already seeing, now this is like, now we have to relate to this from the perspective of this awareness, right? So you could say this awareness is always the center of the universe, and it's boundless. The center, in fact, is not a point. The center is everywhere. And if it's infinite. So this is how I would hear it, yeah. And if we happen to be in a place called the East, this East is a manifestation of this awareness, which is the center of the universe. So we're always in the center of the universe. And the center of the universe is called the Self, the radiant light of the Self, this awareness. So the East is not the East of the common world. It's the center of the Dharmadhatu. It's the middle of the fist, which I hear is like a Zen expression for like right here. It's like this kind of tangible, like they use this image quite a bit, like a fist is like, you know, what is vast emptiness? My fist held up in space, you know. That's the east. Although it covers the east, the radiant light is 8 ounces. Study that there is east in this land and in other lands, and there is east in the east. In regard to the 18,000, 10,000 is half a fist, half this mind. It's not necessarily 10 units of 1,000, or it's not necessarily thousands. It's not tens of thousands or 1,000,000. The Buddha lands are within an eyeball. So all this is to say, right, the eyeball is another name here, right, for the radiant light of the Self. So all the Buddha lands in all directions are within the eye of a contemplative, right? We heard earlier. To see and hear the words illuminates the 18,000 Buddha lands, and assume it is like extending a piece of white silk toward the east, or like a thread of white silk toward the east, is not the study of the way. So this is,
or maybe like to think of it as shining a flash.
Exactly.
Over there.
That's right. I think that's right. And how we usually see it, and the sutra even makes it sound like this flashlight beam from the hair curl, like a thread of white silk, laser beam, illuminating. But he's saying that's not what this means. To hear illuminates the 18,000 lands, assuming it's like extending this line out toward the east, is not the study of the way. The entire world of the 10 directions is just the east. Because this illumination, right, is not a linear beam of light. It's all-inclusive, always. I think he keeps pointing us back to any way we think of the light as ordinary, like beams of light or colors of light. It's not like that kind of light. It's the entire world of the 10 directions is just the east.
Why the east?
In a way, you could say it's just a particular location is also the totality of everything.
We'll just pick east.
Yeah, east, because the sutra says east.
Right.
Yeah, maybe that's why the sutra says something. Maybe there's some esoteric meaning to the sunrise.
Yeah,
but I think it doesn't matter here. I think he's just playing with this particular direction is actually the is all the 10 directions.
You find it all kinds of seemingly silly ways, like 8 ounces or
playing with this idea,
kind of like reifying it in all kinds of ways, it's just like light is blue or white.
Yeah, so always playing, you say, is the light is not these colors, and yet at the same time, the light is everything, and these very particulars, 8 ounces, or a fist, or the east. But actually, there's no space, or distance, or time, or activity from the point of view of the light. So that's why it's not like extending a thread through space and time.
It seems like for me, there's also this like expectation that he's going to clarify after the first 10,000, he's going to clarify the next 8,000.
yeah.
Moves on to the next.
And so some of this is just.
It's kind of intentional, probably. Kind of like.
Yeah.
This expectation to be like, actually, it's not really relevant.
And he's very playful, too,
that's
right?
The thing.
Yeah.
That's what makes it.
So if we're trying to like figure out, I think he is often making particular points, but it's done in this very playful way, too, and using all these Zen images and, you know, using this one line from a sutra to just talk about the inconceivability, ungraspability of light.
And even Menzon is reluctant to tell us how to turn on the flashlight.
Yeah.
He just says,
don't obscure the light.
Obscuring it.
The light of the self.
You want to know how to turn it on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we can sit with that.
I think he even says later in the essay something like, when we start thinking with conceptual thought, then that dims and obscures the light, or seems to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The entire world of the 10 directions is just the east. The east is called the entire world of the 10 directions. This being so, there is the entire world of the 10 directions. The words that express the entire world of the 10 directions are heard by the 18,000 Buddha lands. So, you could say, these words of the sutra that express this sentence are heard throughout space and time because sound is permeating awareness. Remember the voice, the flower ornament sutra says the voice of the Buddha is all sounds in all directions, including this line from the sutra. It's really inconceivable, of course, here. But this is kind of like, I feel like spending time with Dogen like this, I feel like the effect on me is it kind of like warms me up to this inconceivability in a playful way, too. So then there's this story of this emperor and his ministers, just, you know, to paraphrase a little bit here, he does this ceremony revering the Buddha's relics, and a radiant light appeared, and the emperor was delighted, and his ministers and courtiers congratulated him, but one of them didn't congratulate him, and the emperor asked why, and he said, well, I've read in the Buddhist writings that Buddha light is not blue, yellow, red, or white. So this light that you saw radiating must have been the light of a guardian dragon god. And some other kind of more mundane light. Still a kind of special, rare spiritual light, but not Buddha light. The emperor said, what's Buddha light? And this minister was silent. And the Dogen includes this in his 300 koans, number 173. And it's the same story, but at the very end, after the emperor was silent, then it says, he was forced to resign.
Han Yu,
because he was sort of like not praising the emperor. And then Dogen says, you know, he was really great. He was a great lay person to be able to respond this way. But then Dogen has to critique him a little bit and saying, there's something though he didn't understand. How did he study the words that Buddha light is not blue, yellow, red, or white? How did he understand this in Buddhist literature or in Buddhist writings? If he had the ability to see that what is blue, yellow, red, or white is not Buddha light, he should not see Buddha light as blue, yellow, red, or white. If Emperor Xiang had been a Buddha ancestor, he would have challenged him in that way. And so I don't know exactly what's going on there, but Dogen makes his point. And I imagine that it's something about this, I think it's something about this, that he read this in this Buddhist text. And he's critiquing that he just heard this, rather than, saying this directly. He said, I read this about this. And so if Dogen's saying, if he really had the ability to see that these colors are not Buddha light, he should not see Buddha light as these colors. And maybe these colors are these words, these like writings. That's one, you know, possible interpretation. So basically the point here again is just that Buddha light can't be seen. Thus, bright radiant light is 100 grasses. The radiant light of 100 grasses cannot give or take away roots, stems, branches, and leaves, as well as flowers, fruits, light, and colors. So, really, it's bright radiant light is 100 grasses. So this is is referring to this story of Layman Pong. Again, I think Dogen's is looking for every reference to light, as he often does as a theme here. But this is a nice story. A man of Zen, Layman Pong, the great Tang Dynasty lay practitioner, practiced with Matsu and Shuto, and his daughter was Acharya Ling Zhao. One of our women teachers that we chant her name. So Layman Pong was sitting one day, he questioned his daughter Ling Zhao, saying, an ancient ancestor said, bright, bright are the 100 grasses. Bright, bright, the ancestor's meaning.
So, the ancestors.
Meaning. The meaning of the ancestor's words. how do you understand this? And Ling Zhao said, what a thing for you to say in your ripe old age. Mm-hmm. And her dad said, well, what would you say, daughter? And she says, bright, bright, the 100 grasses, bright, bright, the ancestors' meaning. And Layman Pong laughed. Ryo-ryo? It might be. It might be. It is, actually, I think it's myo-myo in this case. So it's the myo of ko-myo. Bright, bright, the 100 grasses. So, it's just one of these end stories.
Why did that 100 grasses usually means phenomenal?
Yeah, all the myriad things. So, and
I wanted to say that, I'm sorry.
Bright, so bright, and brightness, here you could hear, is the radiant light, right, of non-duality, where there's only one. Bright, bright, myo-myo, ko-myo in this case. Bright, bright, radiant light is 100 grasses. So the light of the self is, again, the universe in 10 directions, or in this case, more poetically, the 100 grass tips. The radiant light of 100 grass tips cannot give or take away roots, stems, branches, and leaves, as well as flowers, fruit, light, and colors. So the radiant light doesn't really, this was where we were saying, do things arise from, this is one way you could hear this, when you say, do things arise from the radiant light? They don't really arise from it, because they just are it. They're expressions of it,
yeah.
Right? So this would be like a little commentary on that, that these, the radiant light of these myriad things doesn't give roots, stems, flowers, and things, and it doesn't take away things. In other words, it doesn't give rise to things, and it doesn't make things cease, because things really don't arise and cease.
So I see it as a bubbling. But it's a bubbling of its own substance, or a wave, same thing, you know.
Yeah. Of its own substance.
Arises from something else. It's mm-hmm. just its own. That's what I was saying.
Yeah,
everything
like that.
Everything is itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because everything is, you can't get out of that.
Yeah, it's a bubbling
nothing
of itself.
Comes. Yeah.
It's just nothing new ever happens in this world. Yeah. And yet, the expression is always new and right. like totally dynamic.
Well,
And that was last week's thing of, what about dependent co-rising? We say, well, that's the expressions of light, the way they appear to interact with each other. It's what we call dependent co-arising. They appear to come and go dependent on the other grass tips. But the radiant light doesn't actually give rise to roots, stems, branches, leaves, flowers, and it doesn't take them away. There is radiant light of the five paths. This is the five realms of samsara, and the six realms of samsara. So the five is just, you know, like hell, hungry ghost, animal, human, deva, realm, and then later they added in this thing of like the kind of asuras, the fighting devas that are trying to enter the deva realm. So there's a five realms and a six realms. So basically that's all sentient beings. That's what five and six realms are. They're the types of sentient beings in samsara. That they're all really radiant light. This is again this positive view. They are the light of the one self. Where there is, how would you talk about the light and the radiance? Where there is radiant light of the six realms, where there is, how would you talk about the light and expound the light? How do the mountains and rivers appear all of a sudden? How the mountains, rivers, and great earth appear all at once.
And they didn't.
I'll just, yeah. They,
oh, yes.
they, Well, up here, we can say they didn't, maybe we can say there's a slight difference between up here and arise. They don't exactly arise as things, but they appear as manifestations of light. And this comes from this book of Serenity, case 100. The last story in the Book of Serenity somebody quotes the Sharangama Sutra and says, purity is originally so. And I think the commentary actually on this case says, purity is another name for Tathagata Garbha, the storehouse of the Tathagata, or the light of the self. Its purity is originally so. How does it suddenly produce mountains, rivers, and the great earth? And a student asks their teacher that, and the teacher says, responds by saying, purity is originally so. How does it suddenly produce mountains, rivers, and the great earth? It's a lot like the Ling Zhao story, right? She just repeats back the same thing her dad said. It's a Zen thing. So it's a nice quote to throw in there in the midst, because it's very similar to what we're talking about, right? Purity is purity. The light of the self is originally so. How does it suddenly give rise to mountains, rivers, and earth? So let's stop there. Yeah. And we can finish next week with the Yunmen's story is really the great final story here.
I trust him.
Thanks for being so light.
We're light sensitive.
Yeah, we're light sensitive. Sometimes we forget too much light. We have to wear sunblock.
That's true.
Which we might call like sunblock is like taking a week off from studying this essay.
You know, don't over.
Yeah, don't overdo it.
Don't do it.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.